You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Betty Jerotz. She's in Ljubljana in Slovenia now. Betty, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for inviting me, and hello to everybody.
So Betty, I want to talk about your book, When Attitude Becomes the Norm, The Contemporary Curator and Institutional Art. But just to give us a context, and I know you're a historian and a theorist, can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing in Ljubljana? And then I want to talk about the approach that your method for approaching the book.
In Ljubljana, I teach at the Faculty of Arts. I'm a teacher at Art History Department, and I mostly teach on 19th and 20th century, also contemporary art. About my book, about my approach. I was writing my book for a very long time, and the thing is that I somehow started already in the 90s. Then I was studying art history, and I was following contemporary art, and I really liked it. And then I got a job of assistant curator in Moderna Galleria Ljubljana, which is, you know, kind of MoMA for my country. And I was really happy about it. But then somehow the problem started for me, because the deeper I went into the art system, the less I liked it. So I decided.
And why was that? What was there an event or something that happened that made you begin thinking that it wasn't to your liking or didn't meet a certain expectation?
No, it was not, you know, one event or just one thing that would happen, you know, but altogether, you know, when you're dealing with art system, very quickly you see that it has a lot of sides which are not really nice. You know, I was very idealistic about art. I believed in all kinds of things that art can do. And then, you know, when you get, if you go close more to, let's say, to the art market and things like that, you know, you might not like it. You know, and then my decision was not that I would completely just stay away from it, but I decided, okay, I will research what curating means, and then I will decide if I will be doing it further or not. And then, you know, I really then started to do a research where I, you know, wanted not to ponder only the most obvious facts, like, yes, curator is different from the classical art custodian, yes, curator has a strong impact on art exhibition and artists and so on. But, you know, I wanted really to understand why this form of curatorship is occurring and who the curator actually was. What sort of activities, responsibilities, powers belong specifically to him or to her? You know, I was interested also in the influence of the curatorial on our society. So, in a way, you know, I could present myself as a curator who's afraid of curating. So at the beginning, you know, there was no strict methodological approach. But then, how should I explain? You know, I see that the 20th century had given a rise to an extraordinary fate in art and its positive dimensions, and that all around the globe. And this was the basis for the creation of a gigantic and still growing institutional platform for contemporary art. And now this platform creates a permanent need, you know, for a large workforce to manage it, to organize it, to interpret it. And therefore, then I started to analyze the curator as a figure who appears, evolves, who tirelessly participates, you know, in this institutionalization of contemporary art. And actually, is the development of this platform and its requirements which forms, in a way, the figure of the curator, which is then, on one side, very bureaucratic, managerial, producing figure, and simultaneously, you know, somebody who's actively involved into conception, development of art, interpretation of art, and so on. So I can see a very strong duality in this curatorial figure. So, you know, I went into this, let's say, understanding of contemporary art system as producing some kind of institutional art, let's say. And I don't think that this is something new. What I think is that with the curator, you know, this achieves a new level. You know, now art is not created anymore only with the idea and the hope that it might one day end in an art institution, but is actually made in close collaboration with the art institution. It's designed to fit the institution's space, needs, and so on. And also what is important for me is that it doesn't end here, but then the institution also canonizes its own production. Yeah? First it produces this, and then the process of canonization starts. So in this way, the contemporary art institution is quite different, you know, from the other kinds of museums. So does this explain
because,
a little
because
bit?
Of it, because of its specific structures is what you're saying. And this is in some ways to me where the where it's so interesting and perhaps the conflict that artwork gets made to adapt to these institutions, as you're saying, and the structures which you're describing. Is that correct?
Yes, artwork is adapting to that situation. And, you know, things that are important for me here are, you know, some facts that I just think that we're not thinking about them enough. You know, the institutions today have become commissioners and producers of contemporary art of a type and scope as, you know, only aristocracy and church were before. And, you know, I'm really curious about that. What does that mean? You know, I want to think about that. I'm trying to understand that. You know, I'm trying also to understand why are we now in those institutions, you know, not dealing only with aesthetic experience, but, you know, we are more and more dealing with moral questions. Yeah? At the same time, in this institutional structure, you know, we developed many, many irrational beliefs like, you know, about art, artworks, artists, even, you know, about owners, let's say, of art. You know, typical irrational belief would be art is the possession of the rich, but we, you know, the classical art audience, we possess it more because we understand it better, we love it better, or something like that. You know, we want to believe by all means that artwork can, in a way, avoid instrumentalization. And I think this is an irrational belief, I would say.
It's interesting. It's very interesting, and I want to go on to some of the themes of your book. But, you know, from the artist's point of view also, I was interviewing Dominic Lehman, a Polish artist, a week ago, and who may be proposing something to the Venice Biennial through a curator, and it may work or not. But he was saying, you know, as artists, we have to think about not just being the suppliers of all these institutions that they want these kind of shows and events and things to happen, and artists get so much in the pattern of fitting that role and making everything site specific and working just for the institution. He said we become kind of a publicity machine almost for the institution, and artists have to be careful to not do that, which in some ways seems to, you know, link in with what you're saying from the artist point of view.
Yeah. You know, from the artist point of view, I mean, you know, if you work with contemporary art in the institutional system, I think you don't have a lot of choices of how you will do things, or you provide to institutions, or you provide to the market, or, I don't know, you're richer enough that you do a production which is then founded by your own means. You know, otherwise, you know, you have to somehow to step in some sort of relations where you will get, you know, funding and production means for production. I do believe, you know, that there are many very different institutions in these systems, but by the very end, I mean the direction of the whole system. Yeah, I find it quite problematic. So
let's talk. Let's talk about some of those problems, because you know, in your book there are these essays that, in a way, trace the trajectory of historically of the curator and the evolution of the curator. Maybe we should talk about mm-hmm. some of the themes mm-hmm. of that. Perhaps the leftist politicization of contemporary art is one of the things that was that you were talking about occurring in the book and is still occurring in connection with the. With a curator, this leftist notion, mm-hmm. which you know, I think that also extends to kind of critiquing capitalism and means of production. Is that correct? Maybe we can explore that a little.
Yeah, I mean, I'm writing a lot about the leftist politicization of contemporary art. That is true in connection with the curator. You know. Me coming from Slovenia, if you lived in Slovenia in the 1990s, it was quite obvious, you know, that the spread of curatorship, which was happening everywhere, but it was also, you know, kind of proceeding from the West to the East, that this spread of curatorship very often coincided with the spread of capitalism and neoliberalism into new territories. And what was very obvious was also that this was accompanied by a very, highly politicized, very self-confident discourse about how contemporary art and institutions could help to construct, you know, a better world, more democratic, more equal, freer world, and so on. You know, so in such circumstances, you know, I decided then to question whether exhibition can really be a socially emancipatory practice and curator effective social political activist. You know, in a sense, are we transforming or reproducing some kind of system? And with this in mind, you know, I then analyze, you know, curatorial schools, curators, also concepts which are very common in contemporary art, as, let's say, the concept of freedom and so on. And the way the things then at the end came out for me was that actually we didn't get, you know, with all this help at the end, a more democratic, freer, more equal situation. But what we have now, after our political change after 20 years, is, you know, classical capitalism. So, you know, if you're thinking from such a position, then these things may sound very, very problematic. May sound very problematic. So,
But the rituals is also what's becoming. Isn't that part of what's problematic? You talk about contemporary art as a set of institutional rituals, and is it over time, as you're saying, these rituals become somewhat ingrained, and then maybe we could talk about the effect of those rituals, if that's what you're saying, isn't it?
I mean, this is another theme that I'm dealing with it a lot, especially now in lately. You know, for me, two important things happened in the late 60s. One of those two changes is that curator became somehow this creative figure, you know, who can mark the exhibitions with his personal imprint, define them with his ideas, philosophy, and so on. This is one major change. Another major change we can locate in the late 60s is that art started being made literally as a consequence of curators' invitations to artists to participate in his or her projects. And I think this change is really affecting it's really affecting also art a lot. I think it's very important in relation art. That would mean, you know, exhibition became more important. It is really the knot in the structure where we protagonists meet, where art happens, where our beliefs get materialized. So, you know, we go slowly into this ritualization. And what regards art, you know, art somehow became very unstable because of this, I could say. You know, we could claim that exhibition...
It became unstable, let me just interrupt you. It became unstable because of the rise of the curator as creative visionary almost. Is that what you're saying? That began.
Yeah, in a way, and also because of this specific way of production. You know, before the 60s, it was the most common that art would be already done, and the curator would take pieces which are already done and bring them into institutions and exhibit them. What we get in late 60s is this new kind of production where curator can invite people, please come to my institutions. I will give this and this room in my institutions. Institution, we are working on this theme, and I'm giving you so much money for the production. So the things are produced for the institution, okay? And I think this is a major change. I mean, this existed also before, but it was not a very common model. And when I'm saying that the artwork became very unstable, what I mean is that, in a way, exhibition became sort of an unavoidable element in the creation of art, né? Or at least of a large segment of contemporary art, or at least, you know, some kind of ideal framework for showing it. I would say, you know, that today the contemporary art is so vitally connected to the exhibition medium that most of it is incapable to any really worldwide existence outside of the exhibition environment. Let's say it like this. Artworks today are often just some sort of, you know, remains or ruins or, yeah, some kind of ruins after exhibition. You know, the artworks would be made for the exhibition and then destroyed, or, you know, they would be in some crate and this crate would be brought to the exhibition, exhibited, then the artwork would go to the crate again, and then, you know, this crate at some point would be destroyed because of the artist's lack of storage. You know, so such artwork is in a way very unstable, and it has the highest chances to remain alive only if it realizes itself, you know, on the market. So we have kind of a paradox, you know, that this institutional art is very highly market dependent in a way. Do you understand what I mean?
I do understand what you mean. It puts the artist in a position, where they're bound, you know, as you're saying, to the capitalist system to make a profit, or in the example you gave, face the potential destruction of work because it's being, you know, produced for these kind of large scale curated exhibitions and institutions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're doing, you know, this type, which is now very common, of contemporary art, if you're not selling, you know, you have piles of stuff somewhere, and then at a certain point, you probably, I don't know what you do with it, but, you know, very often, you know, at the end, you will have to destroy it or something. So I would say that the artworks which are exhibited now, you know, they're really, I would say very unstable. And I would say that this in a way is probably connected to the very strong ritualization of art that we were mentioning before. You know, everything I would say is subordinated to exhibitions, to events, which are actually then only, you know, kind of a part of a flow of a discourse, of utterance, of particular art institution. So in a way, I would say, you know, that this constant flow of exhibitions, events is the chief product of the individual contemporary art institution. So everything is subordinated to that. And because of that, I believe, you know, that we have to shift the focus of our gaze from individual events as, you know, kinds of autonomous entities to the practice as a whole in this field. You know, here, let's say religion is an easily understood practical model of how to, you know, read connectedly a structure and a practice as well as the individual parts of this practice. You know, with religion, it would never occur to us, you know, to interpret the individual rituals as entirely separate and autonomous without at the same time, you know, keeping in mind their place in the entire flow of the religious praxis. And I would somehow like us to change our focus a bit into that direction. You know, because if we look in that way, which is very untypical, I would say, for the art world, things change. You know, it suddenly becomes important what things have in common and not so much how they differ. Yeah? And, you know, if we are looking in that way, we don't see any more curators so much as an author, as, I don't know what, an artist, but he seems more kind of a ritual master who works with, you know, very strongly prescribed formats. Yeah. Also, you know, we see us, you know, like insiders, like participants, you know, we see us involved in these rituals, you know, we can see us in a way being busy and comforted and pacified, while at the same time, you know, we would have this ideological screening for general public going on. So, you know, I would say that now we still have, you know, this classical pacification through culture, which was already described by, I don't know, Gramsci or Williams or Duncan or Bourdieu. But it's only happening in a bit different way. And, you know, it has much larger scope, I would say.
And so we're hoping that your book, When Attitudes Become the Norm, and just, I mean, you know, change what I'm saying, to correct me, will then draw attention. It's part of your idea or goal in this book getting out there for the field to begin looking at itself more and examining itself as you're discussing.
Yes.
Did you say that's correct? Yeah.
Yes, I would say that is correct because, you know, I don't have, you know, kind of illusion that I'm outside of all this because I'm not. And I cannot imagine a society without art. So, you know, my idea is not just let's stop doing art or something like that. But, you know, I can see that a lot of things are problematic. So I would really like us to think about that and, you know, to try and maybe change things and go into some more positive direction, I would say. You know, because what I see now that is very problematic is how art provides a very strong ideological backup for neoliberal, hyper-exploitative system. And I think here changes are really needed. You know, let me explain like this. If we in a way realize that the social logic of art system moved into the heart of the contemporary art society, not art society, but that the art logic moved into the contemporary society, and now most or a lot of people work, you know, in the similar precarious conditions as artists used to and still is, you know, we could assume, at least as a hypothesis, that art now has the role to celebrate this sort of existence and production as good. You know, so I don't think it's so important what we are doing content-wise, but What is really important is this constant commedia dell'arte we're playing, especially because we have a huge media attention, where, you know, artist is some sort of allegory of contemporary man. Yeah. Art, I would say, you know, is still projecting into the world an image of a strong entrepreneurial individual as positive, you know, only that now he's the winner of the horrible, very unpredictable rules and traps of the super unfair art world. And obviously, you know, he has the proof that also in this horrible world, at the end, who is really good can do then also good, great things, achieve beauty. So I would say that the way the things are arranged now in the art system, we are in a way cherishing a completely wrong type of figure. You know, we are cherishing a figure that would do anything for his job, who's in a way totally competitive and rejects any kind of serious solidarity. I find it highly problematic. You know, when we're talking about solidarity in the art world, you know, sooner or later, we will start to talk about solidarity as a menace for freedom or autonomy, which is completely nuts. You know, we're cherishing, let's say, a figure who doesn't take also responsibility for his own production. Yeah, artists are speaking a lot about the responsibility and so on, the same curators. But, you know, I would say that in reality, we are avoiding the discussion about the effects of our doings, about, let's say, ownership also of art. You know, sometimes we really, you know, very hypocritical in a way that, you know, we would be speaking about that, how important is for us who made our T-shirt, and that we're not buying things that are, you know, done in sweatshops in Asia and so and so. But, you know, at the same time, we are avoiding the discussion about who is, if we're, let's say, artists, about who is buying our works. So, you know, these things I find very problematic, and I think, you know, we should start to talk about the production, how should we change the production, and not so much about the content and only content and, you know, keep on, you know, thinking in these terms of artistic autonomy as being something the most important. Am I clear here? Do you understand?
That sounds very clear. What that kind of brings us to is then, you know, I mean, if I can bring up like the, you know, the recent Power 100, they call it, right? Art Review, the people on the top of that list are people like Hansel Rick Obrist, Adam Cismic, you know, director of Documenta, David Zwirner, you know, Iwan Wirth. I mean, these are the people who are exactly the opposite of what you're of what you're saying, right?
It's
you know, so how does this? Because I love what you're saying, and I love what, you know, that we're discussing this book, and particularly what you're just saying then, which is a, you know, we'd like to see that change occur. How can it occur? And I guess what I'm saying is, how can everybody support that, other than, you know, sharing what you're doing in the field, becoming more conscious, like you're saying? How can people support that when right now the art world is kind of holding up people, like I just mentioned, as the most powerful, which runs right against the grain of what you're talking about would be nice to achieve?
I mean, first of all, it would be super nice if we would, you know, be very clear about the situation in contemporary art world, because, you know, what is very problematic is, you know, this sort of behavior that we have, you know, where we know about all kinds of things which are problematic, but, you know, we will keep going on and going on into direction, which is, I would say wrong. So, you know, I think that people should take simply more personal responsibility, you know, work more on solidarity and such things. I think, you know, all kinds of practical, fair activities are there that we can do them quite easily. I mean, let's say in writing on art, about art, you know, not all art writing, you know, should be done in the sense that we're waiting, you know, the exhibition to happen and then you're writing the critiques, you know, in this classical logic. Or, I mean, you know, we are producing huge piles of catalogs. I don't know why. Eh? I mean, this is not necessary. You know, you personally, eh, by yourself, you can say, okay, I'm not doing this in that way anymore. If I don't have, you know, if I don't have something to say, I'm not doing, you know, a catalog and, you know, things like that. So there are small personal changes that can be done by an individual. And otherwise, you know, one of the things that I would really like is that more and more people would, you know, start talking about this system as truly problematic and, you know, trying to imagine another system or a separate system or a parallel system, you know, and then maybe the things would go also in some other direction. Maybe. I don't know. I think it's worth trying. But, you know, if we don't talk about that at all, and if there is not a constant critique on this problem, I think nothing will happen.
I think you're right. Betty, before we go, it's been great talking to you about this, and I really love your book. There'll be a link to it so people can find out more about it. But I wanted to ask you what you're reading now, which is a question I often ask. Is there a book or books you'd want to share with us that you're reading at the moment?
Actually, you know, I'm reading the books which I'm for the university, for my teaching. So I'm reading a lot of books on the 19th century because we're dealing with some questions of development exhibition of in the 19th century.
Betty, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure talking about your book, and thank you. I wish you well with it.
Thank you. It was very nice talking to you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.